Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. Hey, Brent. Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Doing well. Hope you're doing well as well. My goodness, where do we start? I do want to get... Well, let me ask you this first off. On the show you do last night on Tuesday nights, Brent, Cade Mays, I think it was you guys were promoting, was on the show last night. How's he doing physically, and what's the latest that you can give us on the updates for Hendon Hooker and others?
Well, Cade's dealing with an ankle sprain, and I did not want to get into any specifics with his injury last night. But I would be surprised if Cade's available this week. I think probably it's more realistic that he is hopeful to be back with for Kentucky. When you talk about a big guy dealing with an ankle sprain, I just think that's it's hard for those guys to bounce back and. A short period of time. He obviously wasn't healthy enough to get back in the game on Saturday. So my guess would be probably Kentucky, after the open date is the hope for him to be back. Hooker's the biggest surprise because, one, it's not a long-term injury. And, two, he did more on the practice field on Tuesday than any of us ever dreamed that he would do. So we'll see where he's at as the end of the week gets here. He's obviously sore, dealing with, a knee bruise, I guess, of some kind, but it's not anything from a ligament standpoint. So there's no long-term issue with him. Will he play on Saturday? I don't know if he plays if he's not 100%. I don't know what Coach Heupel will do. I don't know what Hendon will be able to do. But he tested it out and did more yesterday than anybody anticipated he would.
Let's start from the end of the game and go back. Let's go ahead and get that out of the way. Sure. The fiasco that took place at the end of the contest because of the call, the things that were thrown onto the field, Tennessee being fined $250,000. We know that it was a packed house along with a ton of recruits. Was not Tennessee's best look, right?
No, I mean, look, that's the national story. That's the narrative that came out of that game was the fact that there was a 20-plus minute delay because of things that were thrown on the field. So, no, that's not the look that anybody is wanting. It tarnishes what was a great atmosphere, what was a hostile environment the way it's supposed to be for a road team, a ranked opponent coming to town. On a night where things felt really normal for a long period of time. So it's definitely not the look that anybody wants. It's not what you need to have happen or what should happen. People have asked me, does it affect recruits? I don't think it has any kind of real effect on a kid making a decision to come to school to Tennessee or anything like that. But it's not the look that you want.
Okay, that was my next question is, did you think it had any effect on any of the kids were there, and really not really the kids, but maybe their parents that were sitting there watching this?
I don't think so. I haven't talked to every kid that was there, haven't sat down and talked to every parent that was there, but the kids that we have spoken with have all talked about the pregame atmosphere, the light show, the intensity of the game, all of those things, and they've not dwelled or really got into anything about what that look meant to them or how it impacted them. So I don't think it's significant from a recruiting standpoint.
Other than the fiasco that took place with things that were thrown onto the field, when you've only got 2 or 3 seconds on the clock, you basically have one job, and that's to throw it to the end zone, which – obviously is something that Coach Heupel really didn't want to talk about after the game. His response was, we all know what he should have done. Did Joe think that he could make it from 16 to 20 yards out, and then he got caught, and at that time when he crossed the line, there was nothing he could do?
Well, if he thought he would make it, he didn't give much of an effort to make it. I don't want to just beat a kid down or anything like that, but When you tuck that ball under your arm and cross the line of scrimmage, then it better take 4 or 5 guys to get you to the ground. You better be trying to run over somebody. I think two things there that just are going to leave a lasting impression. One, the decision not to throw it in the end zone, which doesn't make any sense. from a quarterback standpoint. You got to know time and place, obviously. But when you turn and you tuck it and you run, you can't get tapped out of bounds or even step out of bounds. I mean, you got to go, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you got to cut it back in the middle of the field. You got to look, try to get somebody to maybe make a block or something crazy to happen there. You got to get tackled. And he didn't. And that was two poor decisions on a desperation play where there didn't appear to be a whole lot of desperation from Joe Milton.
What do we take from this game? I mean, Tennessee played the 13th ranked team in the country basically from start to finish and gave a tremendous effort and still had an opportunity to win the game in the end. Does it say that Coach Heupel's team is on the right track, and could they soon, hopefully probably not this weekend, but could they soon be turning the corner?
Well, I think what it tells you is that if you're going to play Tennessee, you better roll up your sleeves. If you're going to play this team, you better roll up your sleeves and come to work, because this team's got a ton of fight in them. Do they have enough horses in the stable? No. I mean, probably not to upset anybody. You know, we'll see what happens with the Kentucky game. You know, they played that team toe-to-toe, Ole Miss, with a lot of parts that nobody anticipated would be in that game because of various injuries and things that they were dealing with. So I think that you're learning about this team is that they have a fight. They have a plan. This group of players is executing the plan for the most part. But you also know, Kenny, that they can't overcome self-inflicted wounds. If you're going to be the ranked team, if you're going to upset somebody, then you got to make a field goal at the critical time. You can't muff a punt. You can't make those kind of major mistakes. Nobody plays the game perfect, okay? That's a given. It's a game of imperfection. But you cannot have those kind of game-altering plays go against you. And that's the next step for Tennessee, is they have got to execute in the moment better than they did on Saturday night, you know, and a couple key areas. I mean, you look at their two SEC losses. They missed a field goal in both games. They turned it over on a punt against Florida and gave them a short field. They dropped a fourth down pass against Florida that would have very easily been a first down, might even been a touchdown to keep them in the game. Those are, you know, there are lots of plays that make up the outcome of the game, but those are game-altering plays that Tennessee's been on the wrong side of. And that's the next step for this program.
I think something that is just frustrating to Tennessee fans and probably to Tennessee's defense is its inability to stop dual threat quarterbacks. I mean, Matt Corral rushes for 195 yards in this game. Trust me, and he took a licking that they're wondering about him playing this weekend. I think he'll be fine. But now they get ready to face another dual threat quarterback. What is the problem there? Is it the defense in which they're lining up in? Is there not a spy for the quarterback? How, this week, does Tennessee make this defense better against dual-threat quarterbacks?
Well, the one thing you got going this week is Bill O'Brien at Alabama has no desire for Bryce Young to run it 30 times. They're not going to design as many run plays for him the way Lane Kiffin did for Matt Corral. That's not what Alabama's going to do. Now, defending a scramble versus defending a design run, two different things. You know, in terms of defending a scramble, Tennessee's got to play the edge. They got to contain better, all of those things. Alabama may run a few quarterback draws here and there, but they're not going to run 20, you know, the way Ole Miss did. You know, Tennessee wants to play across the line of scrimmage. They want to play upfield, very vertical. And in this game Saturday against Ole Miss, they did not want anything thrown over their head. They did not want to give Ole Miss cheap plays, and they gave up a bunch of yards because of it. But you know, if you just say going into the game they were going to give up 31 points, they're going to get a safety, they're going to sack Matt Corral five times, and in the second half they were going to give up one score and five first downs, everybody probably said Tennessee's going to win the football game. I'm not saying they intentionally gave Matt Corral all those yards because they had some opportunities to tackle him and they didn't get him on the ground. But I do think they made a commitment that said, you know what, this guy is not going to sit back and throw it over our heads all night long. If we give up some yards on the ground to him, we'll give up some yards on the ground, which obviously they gave up more than they wanted. But I think that was part of it. I think if Tim Banks looked when he reviewed that tape and went back, I think there's a part of him that probably wishes he would have played some more six defensive back package. They played that a little bit with Brandon Turnage, and it had some effectiveness. Probably wishes he would have mixed it up a little bit more than what he did.
Tennessee's running game, Jabari Small, rushed 21 times, total 92 yards with a touchdown. Hooker totaling 23 rushing attempts. There were just five carries left over for Whitehead. My question is, Tyon Evans suited up. I don't know if it was a ploy to, you know, or he didn't want to wear street clothes, but he was pretty much a decoy because he didn't come in due to the ankle injury. Does he play this weekend?
I don't know if he plays or not. And look, following injuries with this team is a challenge because Josh Heupel does play a lot of games with the injuries on the media front. This guy's good. This guy's, you know, this, that, and the other. They've certainly dressed guys for pregame warmups and put them back in street clothes for the game. So we will see. I mean, he's continued to rehab. He's done some things on the practice field. Is it enough? Is he comfortable enough pushing off and all of that this week? I think that'll be decided Friday or and Saturday, you know, not today. That was the biggest issue, is he just did not feel like, and the trainers and medical people after warmups did not feel like he could push off the way that he did. He got treatment around the clock Friday and all day on game day, hoping that he was going to be able to go, but they just did not feel like he could cut the way he needed to cut on Saturday, and they certainly missed him. And that's nothing against Jabari Small, but they certainly missed Tyon Evans on the field in a couple of ways. One, they miss his ability to make plays with the ball in his hands, and two, they're missing him in pass protection right now. 11 sacks the last two games. They gave up, I think, four of those six sacks against South Carolina came in the second half, largely after Tyon Evans was out of the game. They are missing Evans in pass pro. Tennessee's running backs have to be much better in pass pro this week.
Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com with us this morning. Brent, we're hearing some rumblings out of Jeremy Pruitt's attorney down in Texas that he's telling Tennessee they're not bluffing. They've got a lot of information here, and Tennessee basically has responded and said, bring it on. Now, what's the latest you can tell us on all this?
It's going to be a showdown at some point, it sounds like. Tennessee's been very clear from the moment Jeremy Pruitt was fired, he was not going to get his buyout money. The chancellor was very emphatic about that last January. Tennessee's counsel was very emphatic about that in their response to the letter that we learned yesterday. Jeremy Pruitt's letter from his lawyers to the university mentioned several names that he says he is evidence of their wrongdoings. Those people whose names were mentioned were not happy, in particular Rick Barnes, who's come out nationally to ESPN and made it very clear he's unhappy that his name was thrown out there and finds it to be extremely unfair and inaccurate. And we'll see. You know, this lawyer represented Coach Beatty in the suit against Kansas, and they won. And we'll see. Now, that was a different scenario. The interesting thing about this letter that was sent to the university, and I'm not surprised this happened. I mean, there was rumblings back in the summer that if they did not reach a settlement, that Jeremy Pruitt was going to go to court because it's $12 million. And that's a lot of money, you know, for a football coach who was fired. And because you just don't get a lot of firings with cause these days. Most places are willing to settle and move on. Tennessee's been very adamant that they're not willing to do that. But the one interesting thing about the letter is it never says in the letter that Jeremy Pruitt's innocent of anything.
Right.
Of any wrongdoings. It just says, hey, I wasn't the only one. There's a lot of people on that campus that have been doing wrongdoings. So what's a judge going to allow? You know, what kind of final heave, Hail Mary is this? Was this, I mean, if this was a scare tactic, it nobody seems to have flinched at the University of Tennessee at this point. So we'll see where it goes from there. But it's very clear Jeremy Pruitt has no desire to go quietly into the night.
Speaking of buyouts, 16.9 for Coach O at LSU. Obviously, it was in the works before the win the last weekend over Florida, but the timing was a little odd coming off that win, but the die had already been cast on him being gone.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it was a scenario where they did not want to get down the road of, okay, he's going to win to save his job, you know, kind of like the Gus Malzahn stuff for years at Auburn,
yeah.
Right? I mean, every year he was on the hot seat, and then he goes and he beats Alabama at the end. They get a contract extension out of it. I just think that LSU's administration did not want to get into any scenario like that. I think Ole Miss better strap it up, because I think those kids will play for Ed Orgeron this week in that matchup. $16 million, almost $17 million for Coach O to go away. And I give Coach O a lot of credit. He's been very classy in how he's handled everything. He's just, you know, ready to go back to business. They've had some decommits. It's obviously a mess for them in recruiting. And then all eyes are going to be on Jimbo Fisher. And I know what Jimbo Fisher came out and said, and he's happy. And, you know, at Texas A&M, he's got everything he wants there and all those things. And he does. And he may very well stay at Texas A&M. But I can promise you, I will be stunned if the LSU administration, including the AD, Scott Woodward, who hired Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, and they're still good friends, if he does not make Jimbo tell him no multiple times.
What about Lane Kiffin?
Well, if Jimbo Fisher stays at Texas A&M, then I think, you know, I think Lane Kiffin could certainly be in play at LSU.
Wow.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, you got listen, the names you're going to hear are all going to be represented by one agent who represents most every college football coach. You know, and he's getting ready to move into his season of placement, you know, of who you move in here and who you move in there, and all those things. And so we'll see. I mean, who does he try to get involved with the USC job? What happens at LSU? I mean, is Jimbo going to say yes or no? Then, if, you know, depending on that decision, what's his placement? You know, who's he trying to place at LSU? And I think Lane Kiffin would certainly be a factor in that. Now, you know, the interesting thing is Jimbo Fisher, and the craziest thing in the world, has no buyout. He can walk from A&M anytime he wants to, scot-free.
Wow.
Not a dime. Nobody has to pay that school a dime if Jimbo Fisher goes and takes another job. Jimbo Fisher could go to Texas, and he would owe A&M nothing, and Texas would owe A&M nothing. And same with LSU. So, there's, you know, that's part of the attractiveness there, particularly when you're paying $17 million for the guy you're firing to go to Way. Now, if you're paying for, you know, say Lane Kiffin, you're $17 million for Orgeron to go away, and you've got to pay to get Lane Kiffin out of his contract at Ole Miss. You know, you're going to be in the mid 20s before you ever pay the first salary of anybody. You may be closer to $30 million when you talk about assistant coaches that you've got to fire. That's really expensive, really fast. You know, we heard for years LSU didn't have a lot of money, and then they went out and hired women's basketball coach and paid her $2 million. So maybe they got it growing on trees down there like most of the rest of the SEC seems to have. So going to be an expensive move if it's not Jimbo Fisher for LSU. And again, I think they're going to make Jimbo Fisher say no multiple times.
You know, you mentioned something just a minute ago when you said that most college coaches have the same agent. I'm just curious. In some sports, you know, we know in baseball, it's
Scott Boras,
yeah. Who kind of pulls the string. He's kind of the puppet master. Just how powerful is this one agent in college football?
I think Jimmy Sexton, who is the agent, is the most powerful. He's the most powerful guy in college football.
Wow.
Now, he doesn't make rules. I mean, he's not the guy who's, you know, dictating, you know, rules of the sport on the field. But when you talk about the finances, I mean, you know, I mean, he's the guy who's created the contract for Nick Saban. And has gotten the sport to paying coaches $10 million a year, $7, $8 million a year. I mean, he's the guy when you go hire a coach, you're going to have to deal with. I mean, because somebody on your list is represented by Jimmy Sexton. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Jimmy Sexton. I'm just saying Jimmy Sexton, you know, it's like, you know, you mentioned it in baseball. I mean, if you're going to go hire a coach, you know, Jimmy Sexton's going to be involved in your hiring process. He's going to be very hard to avoid because coaches want him to represent them because of the deals he's gotten everybody else out there, the protection with buyouts if you get fired, and you know, the ability to move guys and get guys involved in other jobs and those types of things. I mean, he is the guy that has everything goes through him during coaching change season in college football, and it has for years.
And it's funny because he basically kind of stays out of the limelight. And is this like a family deal? Isn't his brother an agent as well that kind of handles all the things from the firm?
No, it's not just a family deal. I mean, there's a lot of people involved in that. And, you know, they merged at one point with another company. I mean, it's big. I mean, it's not like it was when he was representing Reggie White, you know, and he had a handful of guys here and there along the way. You know, he's gotten largely out of the player. The firm has some other players, but he's more directly representing coaches. And then he has his upper tier of coaches that he represents. And then there's a group of people that work underneath him that are representing more of the quote mid-major guys until they get up to the Power Five level. And then he represents them. You know what I'm saying? That, yeah. Then he directly takes that one on, you know, moving forward. So, I mean, he is the most powerful guy when it comes to anything in the world of coaching and college football.
Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. Brent, you mentioned Rick Barnes a moment ago. AP rankings coming out. Men 18th, women 15th. Women pick second in the SEC. Men pick fourth. What are you thinking on that?
Well, if I'm Rick Barnes, I love the fact that we're picked there.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a great setup for them, for some young players to develop and get a little chip on their shoulder and get going that way. And that team peaks because there's not the you know, out of the gate expectations to be, you know, an all world team at the start of the year. You know, it's going to depend on how those freshmen develop for Rick Barnes. I know he likes this team. He feels like they've got a lot of competition every day on the practice field. They got to stay healthy too. You know, Fulkerson's, you know, they've got to manage him throughout the season the right way, give him some time off here and there. And then on the women's side of things, you know, South Carolina, I think, is just far and away the best team in the conference. And then beyond that, I mean, I know Tennessee's picked second, but it's a little more jumbled after that. I think the biggest challenge for Coach Harper is, you know, she's got some youth on this team as well, but her biggest challenge is, can they take care of the basketball? Because what got them in trouble last year and what's gotten them in trouble the last couple of years is those games where they turn it over 27, 28 times. They've got to cut their turnovers down if they're going to live up to their expectations this year.
Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. What's up on VolQuest on this Wednesday, Brent?
Well, we've got our stock report up now. We'll have our Rocky Top Roundtable coming up later today. We'll continue to look more into kind of the Jeremy Pruitt stuff. I don't know that there's going to be any more, you know, fallout from that today. I don't know if there's going to be any more statements made. I mean, Rick Barnes was very adamant, very clear in his statement. I'm not sure anybody else is going to go on the record and talk about that, but we'll continue to look at that, make sure we're not missing anything there. And there's not any more details of that to come out as well. And then, you know, we'll try to keep an eye and work on kind of where Tennessee is on the injury front. How much more does Hendon Hooker do today than he did yesterday? And kind of where is that as we progress towards the end of the week and see this team get ready to go take on Alabama as a very heavy underdog before they get into a much, much needed bye week for this team.
Safe travels to Tuscaloosa. We appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Brent Hubbs of VolQuest.com. Bond 640 WXSM.